The governor meets with the archbishop. Will it stop Catholic Charities from settling a Syrian family in Indiana? Business leaders unite to support a non-discrimination law, the effort to give Joe Hogsett a raise, and I-STEP changes. That plus David Letterman at Ball State and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending December 4, 2015.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.
This week, Catholic Charities revealed plans to use private donations to settle a Syrian refugee family in Indiana later this month. That led to a meeting between Governor Mike Pence and Indianapolis Archbishop Joseph Tobin. After the meeting, the governor, who has ordered a suspension of state services to Syrian refugees, said he cannot justify making an exception for the family. Tobin said he will consider the governor's request. How will this standoff end? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Robert Vane, John Schwannis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Ann Delaney, will Catholic Charities defy the governor?
Oh, I think it will. It would have been interesting, it seems to me, to be in that meeting. You know, you had the representative of the Pope there saying that the corporal works of mercy are part of Catholic religious teaching. You know, feed the hungry, give drink to the thirsty, clothe the naked, shelter the homeless. And you have Mike Pence, who was raised a Catholic, who obviously would have learned the corporal works of mercy, and then you're saying to the archbishop, you can't practice your religion. You can't do what Christ calls upon us to do. I don't know what reason he would have given. I suppose you would say, even though you're vouching for them, archbishop, there's a 1% chance they might be terrorists. He certainly couldn't give the real reason, which is that he's playing to the Tea Party with this whole maneuver on his. But we are a country. States don't set foreign policy, and they don't set immigration policy. And he has no authority to do what he's doing, so I think they'll defy it.
What is the governor's motivation here? Because he can clearly deny state services, but for him to say, I don't want you to bring a family who has come into this country legally across the borders of Indiana, does he want to be governor or
emperor?
Well,
first, as a disclaimer, as a Catholic with two kids in Catholic school, I'm not going to be criticizing the archdiocese. I support their mission in general. In this particular case, there is enough doubt about the procedures in D.C., not only for this particular enterprise, but in other particular enterprises related to immigration and national security, that the governor is certainly within his rights, and I believe correct, to just say, look, we want a pause. We don't want a prohibition. We want a pause, which is what he specifically asked for.
But this family is coming to America regardless.
And that's fine, and that is, to agree with Ann, that, right, that's the federal government's role. But the governor has a separate role, not only from the president, but also the archbishop. And it's his responsibility to make sure that his state is safe to the highest degree possible. And one other thing, very quickly, right after 9/11 and another terrorist incidents, we've said, why didn't we catch this? Why didn't we know? Why weren't we more strict? So now we try to be more strict, and that's a bad thing. It's either or.
It's not the same thing at all. And he doesn't even have any specific ideas about how you'd make it more strict. These people have been vetted. They've been vetted to the nth degree. And the archbishop thinks it's okay, but the governor has no role in this.
And the president's FBI director has said there are loopholes.
No, that's not what he said, as a matter of fact.
That's exactly what he said.
That is not what he said.
He cannot guarantee.
You can't guarantee anything except death and taxes.
Well, then that's where the governor comes in and makes
sure. The governor can't guarantee a squat.
The governor is... he doesn't have the authority to stop this family.
That's right. I mean, I think,
or to deny services, because it's federal money.
I mean, that seems pretty clear, that if you look at federal statute, you look at the legal precedent, it's pretty clear based on decisions and statutes enacted in the 1980s that you can't distinguish among groups when you have federal dollars that are flowing in and you basically have the states serving in a ministerial fashion to divvy up the funds and distribute them. As long as people or recipients qualify in terms of the basic parameters of the given program, you can't say, you know, you're too small, you're too tall, you're too this, you're too that. And I think that's where I mean, again, there's no good answers here, because no matter what happens, we're probably going to be wrestling with this issue as long as anybody on this set.
There is a lawsuit that's been filed by the ACLU on behalf of Exodus Refugee Immigration,
who has said that it will defy the governor
as well. So that may settle all of this for what's going
on
in Indiana.
Short-term settlement, but this is a broader issue and will go on for decades.
There is national polling that shows that the public supports stopping Syrian refugees. Does the governor score political points, regardless of what's going on here otherwise?
Well, I think based on the polling, he probably does. The challenge for people who are arguing Ann's case is to make the differentiation between Syrian refugees and others, and that's what the administration and the governor has been doing, has been separating the two. There are families that have come in to Indiana from other countries since the ban on the Syrians. And so he is saying that it's okay for people from these countries, but not from this country. And so as long as he's able to make that wedge and then the public agrees with that, then from a political perspective, he's okay. From a legal and a moral perspective, that's another question.
It's a completely different question because they're the ones in most in need. When you look at those families...
But on a practical level, though, the Archbishop says he's not sure he wants to make this family a target.
Well, there's that, but then maybe we don't stop with that family. Maybe we bring more so there's less of a target around that family. But when you look at the pictures of what those people are going through to get out of that war zone to protect everybody and their entire family, and we say, you know, anybody read what the Statue of Liberty says? Bring me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses. Not in Indiana.
It's completely reasonable for the governor of any state, of any party, to say, look, I don't have faith in the federal government's ability to do this correctly and completely. Therefore, let's impose a pause, not a prohibition, until they get it right.
This is what I think that maybe the consensus is. Legally, I don't think the governor probably has any standing at all, and that'll be borne out if this goes and it's not thrown out on a jurisdictional question, whether this group has standing or not. But again, in terms of public perception, as has been suggested, I don't see any downside politically, given the attitudes right now.
So it's all about
right now
scoring
in the state,
political
and
points.
And beyond just what the sentiment is now, think about it. He says, let's bar the doors. And if nothing happens in a year, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, he can say, look, I kept you safe.
Right.
If he backs away and makes an exception and one thing happens, then it's his fault because
he can't. That's nonsense.
I'm saying politically, that's
absolutely right.
He put himself in that position, John.
And he did.
He put himself in that position by making that.
But that's the game board right now.
Along with many other governors. Thank you.
There's a new coalition of business leaders this week who are pushing for more LGBT protections in Indiana. Supporters who include Doug Dayhoff of Upland Brewing say the RFRA controversy hurt their businesses. Members include Lilly and Cummins, as well as companies from around the state. Here's Dayhoff.
Economically, it's important to be viewed as progressive and open. And equality before the law, to me, is just kind of a fundamental idea.
Our goal will be to pass meaningful legislation by the end of the legislative session in 2016.
And that's Peter Hanscom, who will manage the coalition. Robert Vane, how much clout do those people have?
Well, probably within that particular business community, their voice is influential, no doubt about it. It's no surprise that this is happening. It's no surprise that this particular group of people have come together. They've been very vocal since the spring. I hope they want to be a part of the conversation, a constructive part of the conversation that Mike Pence has talked about over and over. And let's be completely clear. I don't necessarily believe that RFRA was in any way, shape, or form a boon to this state, in any way, shape, or form, in any forum. However, post-RFRA, we have had some significant economic development announcements, some significant economic development investments, and then the unemployment rates that
they're still
4.5%.
We're still running some risks, though. The NCAA is talking about potentially moving championships.
Right.
There are still conventions
and
I'm talking, but I understand it. But I'm talking about what's happened. FFA, yeah. 8 straight years post-RFRA.
But how do you know there wouldn't have been more development in the absence
exactly,
of?
Exactly, because it's growing.
There wouldn't
it's
have been
growing
less.
Nationally.
Right. I mean,
so,
I'm not sure you can connect the two necessarily.
Well,
but
Freedom,
yeah,
Indiana.
Is.
Freedom Indiana right. has been very successful the right. last couple of years. Why right. is there a need for another organization?
Well, I think as many organizations as want to jump on board, the four words and a comma is the way to go. Certainly the proposal that they're floating through the legislature now is a recipe for full, long-term litigation. I mean, they're trying to redraft the Federal Civil Rights Act, and they're putting all these unnecessary protections in there to appease the right wing of the Republican Party. And all you need are four words and a comma, and this issue goes away, and Mike Pence won't do it.
And for anybody who hasn't been keeping up, that would be sexual
orientation
comma, gender identity.
Right.
these folks are trying to create an economic message as opposed to a gay rights message.
Well, I think that they're very confident that the rights message has gotten through. We've seen from polling that your station and others have done that a majority of people favor additional rights for gay people. So I think that they're trying to, you know, make the additional economic case even more strongly than they have in the past, and that's why you see this new coalition. The challenge for them is to make that case and make it stick. And in, you know, what we saw in Houston in the election last month, mm-hmm. is that things can get pretty muddy in a hurry and you lose rational conversation and it becomes a shouting match.
One of the things that the business leaders have been facing is an argument that it's mostly big business and mostly central Indiana business who are involved in this, and they say that this is going to be statewide and businesses of all sizes. Can they successfully accomplish that, make that argument?
They can try. I mean, but you do look, I'm sure there, let's put it this way, Jim, I'm sure there are many business owners out there, big and small, who don't agree with this coalition. However, this is a coalition of very obvious, very prominent, very large employers who hold sway, and what they say will give. The reason I think this economic focus and this distinction is important, if you have some members of the General Assembly and others who might be uncomfortable with the issue on a moral level, this is a bit of political cover. For those who are concerned, have said, you know, economic development, jobs, that is our number one priority, they can say, look, these people who employ X percentage of the workforce in Indiana, and I don't know what that percentage is, tell us that there is going to be irreparable damage done if we yeah. are seen as discriminating. And that does give political cover in a way that the other argument doesn't.
All right, a proposal was put before the Indianapolis City County Council this week that would give Mayor-elect Joe Hogsett and council members a raise. The proposal would give Hogsett a 32% pay hike. Next year, it would increase the mayor's salary from $95,000 to $125,000 a year. Council pay would go up by a bigger percentage. The pay for the mayor of Indianapolis has not gone up since 2002. John Ketzenberger, is that a good idea?
Practically, I think it's a great idea because the administration of the city ought to be on par with others, and there are at least three or four mayors.
Biggest city in the state, and he's at number 8.
Right. At least three or four of the mayors in adjacent cities are paid well more than the mayor of Indianapolis. The council, that's another thing. They've tied their pay to a percentage of the mayor's. And so that's a part-time legislative thing. So practically, I think it's a good idea. Politically, it's a terrible idea. The timing of this thing is awful. The mayor hasn't even taken office yet, and it's looking like he's trying to grab money, even though this is a council proposal.
Well, he's hands off.
Of course, hands off. But it's a raise for the mayor, and that's the perception, and it's a problem for him politically. And I think that I'm surprised that they're getting themselves into this.
Well, a lame duck council asking a lame duck mayor to give the next mayor a raise.
And maybe that's what it takes to get this done. You know, we used to say that the messing with Social Security was touching the third rail. In many ways, I think, as John suggests, the notion of giving if you're in an elective body and you're awarding yourself or your colleagues an increase, we've seen it at the General Assembly, you know, for decades. But I agree with John exactly. I think public service, government work is an honorable profession. People should be encouraged to go into it, not disparaged. And they probably deserve a bigger raise, frankly, than this, truth of the matter. But that doesn't mean that the political potency of the issue, what they might have been able to do or could do is say that we will pass this now, but it doesn't take effect until the next election. And so that people, voters effectively have a chance to say yay or nay. That might have taken some of the sting out, or might take some sting out.
Outgoing Mayor Greg Ballard has suggested that he might veto this. What are the odds of that?
Did they sue him?
Democrats on the council? I can't remember. Yeah.
The mayor of Indianapolis ought to be the highest paid elected official in Marion County, and he's not. He should make as much. I think the judges and the sheriff make the most, 140. I could be completely wrong.
It's a 24/7 job. You're never off the clock.
You're in charge of a $1 billion corporation, basically. He should be the highest paid elected official in the county, bar none. However that happens is how it happens.
So you think they're going about this properly?
No, I just think that he should be the highest paid elected official in the county.
Okay. You think this will happen, or should Joe Hogsett be forced to shepherd this himself?
I think it should happen. I think that they've been underpaid for a long time, and however it gets done, it gets done.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question: should the mayor of Indianapolis get a 30% raise? Your choices are A, yes, B, no, or C, not that much. Last week's question: will the ACLU lawsuit regarding Syrian refugees succeed? 68% said yes, 16% said no, 16% said they should stay out of this. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. The State Board of Education voted this week to create a permanent committee of student testing experts to oversee ISTEP. The vote was unanimous in favor of creating the new panel that will not only oversee ISTEP, but other standardized exams in Indiana as well. The committee will oversee both the development and operation of tests. The move follows widespread criticism of the ISTEP over longer testing times and delays in results. John Schwanes, is this a case of passing the buck?
Well, let's put it this way.
To whom, from
as,
whom?
As messed up, seemingly as messed up as some of these issues have become, there's enough blame to go around. You have had situations where expert panels have been assembled to work on the development of a specific test. But I think it does, since these are ongoing, the testing doesn't go away for 10 years and then come back. It's on a decennial test. So it probably does make sense to have an expert panel. And you look at the numbers, just, you know, delayed results. You have schools failing. It's 80%, as I understand it, both on language arts and math passed last year.
Okay.
Now 65 and 59%.
Let me try this.
Something's wrong.
More bureaucracy, will that make this better?
Well, the bureaucracy that exists hasn't made it a whole lot better. I think John's right about the difficulty with tests, and the difficulty I think also arises from the fact that we've attached so much importance to the consequences and the outcomes of the tests. Here you have students who are expected to pass a test that changes every year. You're expecting teachers to teach not just, you know, everyday subjects, but also what's going to be on the test so that they can pass. And if they don't do that well, then they don't get as much money as they might otherwise, and their school districts don't get as much money as they might otherwise. And so you've got an incredible amount of pressure on a system. So I don't think the history here in terms of bureaucracy is very good. I'm skeptical, but I'm hopeful that maybe they will take a step back and say, we need to see what these students know, and we need to help them learn that, but we don't want to put all of our marbles on something like this structure, which is bound to fail.
Or if they do put their marbles there, keep the marbles there for a while and not change it.
That's right. There's more confusion surrounding the ISTEP exam.
They have spent hundreds of millions of dollars on these tests, hundreds of millions of dollars, and now they're saying they need experts? You know what? I've got an idea. You know, Glenda Ritz has been saying for some time the reliance on the funding and for the teachers' rewards based on these is false. And now the governor even admits it, although he says, you know, whatever it is, don't take it personally. The problem with this is we ought to abolish the State Board of Education. That's what we ought to do. We ought to just abolish it. It has bollocks this entire system for the last 3 years. It's been terrible. It changes every day, almost every hour they change the testing, and it's absurd that we're spending the amount of money on it we're spending. So it ought to just, that group of volunteer non-experts who are appointed by the governor and not accountable to
Sarah
anybody.
O'Brien,
ought to be gone.
An elementary school
teacher.
They ought
to be gone. One
Sarah,
school teacher
the
is not a summer make.
But a librarian makes a superintendent, but a school teacher doesn't make a State Board of Education member.
She was elected
right?
In spite of
You've
the fact
never
that
met Sarah O'Brien.
Let's give Robert a chance. Is this going well?
I think Robert always takes his chance.
I'm always happy to be on the show with Ann Delaney.
Thank you.
I would say this, that this Board of Education is really doing a terrific job, I think.
they have addressed... Why do they pass this off to another group, then?
Well, I think what happens is in any particular instance, you want as many experts as possible. The Pence administration, the governor said this won't affect. As someone who has kids taking the I-STEP test, I'm not going to lie and say that it's not something that weighs on all of our minds, but we've all taken standardized tests. It's important to know what one county is doing versus another county, and you measure statewide achievement. No one's making excuses for the problems they've had, but the idea that accountability will go away, which would just make the union people happy, is a non-starter.
In the same way that the governor wants accountability to go away
Moving on.
2.0.
Most of the families who applied for Indiana's new preschool pilot program were turned away due to limited funding. The Indianapolis Star reports that demand was particularly strong in Marion County, where roughly 70% of 2015 applicants were rejected. Governor Mike Pence signed the pilot program into law in 2014, setting aside $10 million a year to send 2,500 low-income children to preschool. Robert Bain, what's the moral to this story?
That Governor Mike Pence started the pre-K program in this state, and he's funding it adequately. It makes perfect sense to have prototypes. You have prototypes in everything, whether it's the military buying airplanes, whether it's science projects. That's how we work in life. We don't go buy and spend all the money and do all that until you know that the system works.
All right, and Democrats have been critical, saying that the governor hasn't funded this adequately, but won't this help make the argument in the legislature to create more funding?
We turned down $80 million in federal funds. Every educator in the country says that preschool is important for learning success, okay? We don't need to study it. We don't need a prototype. We need to fund it. And the governor, for all the things he has to answer for, this is one of the biggest things he's have to answer for, because you have 70% of the people applying can't get in because his ideology won't let him take the federal money.
He started the program.
He turned down $80 million.
Which Democrat governor started the program?
Which is a stronger argument, John? Which is a stronger
Governor
argument?
Obama?
President.
The governor started it, or they're not doing a good enough job not taking the federal money?
Well, it has been a program that's been in the pipeline for a very long time. It's something that has been tried to get started by many governors, and it didn't occur until this governor got it through the General Assembly. But Ann makes a very strong argument, because when you see people who are pushed away, who are not allowed to get in, and you understand that $85 million actually, was turned away by the state, then that's pretty powerful.
Yeah. And pilot programs, we understand, I think you do need to start someplace and have proof of performance and proof of concept. But it is tough. It's as if this were some medical study, and we're going to give 30% of the kids who need
placebos.
We're getting 30 fewer than half the actual medication. And then you watch the others languish. It's kind of
hard to explain.
Unsavory.
Finally, David Letterman says he'll donate memorabilia from his TV career to Ball State University. Letterman made the announcement this week in his first appearance at his alma mater since retiring earlier this year. Ball State says the items will include props and sets from his time hosting late night and The Late Show. Letterman graduated from Ball State in 1969. Ann Delaney, will that help secure his status as an Indiana legend?
I don't think you're going to need to do anything to secure his status, but it's a great boon to Ball State. It's got a nice article in the New York Times, and it's a wonderful thing for the university.
Did this category without McDaniel sitting here?
We got a Ball State guy.
I'm just glad to see IP.
Maybe a football team.
Which is more important?
Is it true you're giving this table to St. Cloud State?
I don't think it's was mine to give.
I'm just glad to see an IPS kid do good.
Well, there have been a few of those.
That's right. Yeah. As an alum, I'm happy for him.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Robert Vane, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/IWIR. That's wfyi.org/IWIR. Or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shello of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.